This presentation is sponsored by Lumina Foundation as part of WFYI's American Graduate Let's Make It Happen initiative, made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Lumina Foundation's goal is to increase the percentage of Americans with high-quality degrees and credentials to 60% by the year 2025. Goal 2025 is focused especially on adults, first-generation college students, low-income students, and students of color.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. This is the ninth of a series of 10 conversations about education that we've hosted here at WFYI in partnership with the Indianapolis Public Library. My name is Gail Thomas-Strong, and I'm with WFYI. And this conversation is part of a whole series of conversations that are part of our WFYI American Graduate Initiative. As a public service media, it is our aim to draw spotlights onto the need to increase our high school graduation rates. And we're doing that by trying to build awareness of issues, by engaging people in conversations about those issues, and we hope then moving people to action. This is done through community engagement, and we have lots of partners who are helping us with that, and several of you are in the room tonight, and we're very grateful. We want to extend a thank you tonight to the Lumina Foundation for Education. Lumina has been generous in providing the resources for us to both webcast these conversations and to podcast them. So some of you may be joining us online even right now, and that's terrific. We will do a little bit of cleanup on this and post a link on our website within the next day or two so you'll be able to watch it again. And you can do that at wfyi.org/American Graduate. I want to thank our special partner for this conversation, the Indiana Partnership Center. They work on behalf of parents and schools every day to make sure that policies and practices are in place so that good teams happen between parents and schools and the community, all to benefit children's education. And you'll learn lots more about the Partnership Center tonight. I also want to thank the United Way of Central Indiana, another of our partners in this American Graduate effort. And you'll learn more about what they're doing to benefit education as well. Well, so our aim tonight is to really zero in on what happens when parents and schools work together on behalf of children. Many of us in this room have either raised children or are raising children, and we know that getting a child on the pathway to high school graduation isn't a happy accident. It really happens by intention, and it happens because we're all on the same team and really working towards that end. The data tells us very clearly that when parents are involved in education, kids do better, and that's our aim. And so tonight we have three outcomes that we want to walk away with before the evening is over. One of them is to make sure that you gain some strategies, some insight into how to build effective partnerships between schools and parents, whether your youngster is in preschool or they're moving on through their graduation in high school. We want to provide you with some guidance on how to be a great partner, whether you are a parent or a teacher. And we want to pick up some ideas for you for effective two-way communication between teachers and parents. I'm pleased to welcome several people who are going to help us learn more about this tonight. You'll hear from them in a minute, so let me just do a quick introduction right now. I first want to welcome Jackie Garvey with the Indiana Partnership Center. Thank you, Jackie, for being here. Elizabeth Odell, who is with the United Way of Central Indiana, and Liz heads Bridges to Success for United Way. Thank you, Liz. Thank you. Maria Wright, who is a parent volunteer. She's also with the Indiana State PTA, and we're very grateful you're here, Maria. And Nasha Abdul-Alim, who is also a parent volunteer. And Nasha, thank you. Glad you're here too. As we begin tonight, I would acknowledge that many of us in this room wear more than one hat. Many of us have children who are here tonight. And sometimes when we're in our professional role, we don't put on that parent hat too. But tonight I'm going to encourage all of us to wear all those hats. So Whether you're a chef or a videographer or a banker or an attorney, whatever your job might be, you have that professional role, but you also are really have the great opportunity to be involved in your children's education. As I got ready for this, I was thinking about all those stages of life for my own children, from preschool through college, and how did I figure out how to do that? So I think all of us have sometimes figured that out by trial and error, but sometimes we've gotten great advice from folks like you. So let's begin. So Jackie, I think maybe a good place to start is to learn a little bit more about the Indiana Partnership Center and the kind of services that you provide.
Thanks, Gail. Well, the Indiana Partnership Center is a not-for-profit, and we are starting our 17th year. And as a Parent Information and Resource Center for the state of Indiana, our mission is really to engage and empower families to be connected to the educational lives of their children, to be connected to their schools, and to also help schools become partners to parents. So we have a wide range of initiatives that we have and a menu of workshops, but I would say that probably the core of what we do is that idea of bringing families in and teachers and educators together.
Great, thank you. And Liz, you come to this evening's conversation as a lifelong educator, as a former school principal, and now you lead Bridges to Success. I wonder if you would describe a little bit about the work of Bridges in particular.
Yes, the Bridges to Success is a partnership that's between Indianapolis Public Schools and United Way of Central Indiana. So it was started in 1991 with a focus primarily on helping some of the selected IPS schools that had a lot of barriers for students making adequate success. And so our mission is to remove the barriers for student achievement, and we try to do that, not try, we do that by making sure that we build enduring partnerships within the schools, within the community, to help with parent engagement as well as community engagement. And what that looks like is that we have managed to hire full-time school community coordinators to be placed in each school so that they can manage, align the programs that United Way provides in those schools for on direct service providers, but then they also are charged with the task of seeking and aligning additional community resources for the schools. They do that while they engage parents in the school activities and provide services for those parents as well. So it is a school community coordination of efforts to help meet the needs of the students, to help meet the needs of the school, as well as the families.
Great. Thank you. And Maria, I've had the privilege of working with you hands-on in a school when you were a parent volunteer and still are a parent volunteer, but you also are part of the Indiana PTA. I wonder if you'd say a little bit about some of your experiences.
Well, I feel like my greatest role is that of being a parent and being a mother of two children and a grandmother of two more children. And right now I'm just active in their lives as well as the lives of my grandchildren. I've been privileged to work with Indianapolis Public Schools for 15 years as a parent liaison and a community coordinator. And at first I kind of thought, oh, you know, I know what to do. I'm a parent. I've got this down. Huh, let me tell you, that was not the truth. I have learned so many lessons from parents in Indianapolis Public Schools, my greatest lessons in how to be a parent, how to advocate for children, and also how to find resources for those parents. So I've had that role. But I'm also part of the Indiana State PTA Board. And what I really love about PTA is that it really gives parents the opportunity to be leaders in their school in an organized fashion. And, you know, I think we all have all these talents and these strengths. And it's really nice to have a community coordinator, a principal, a teacher, who recognizes those strengths. And I've been privileged to be able to be on both ends of that. Somebody recognized something in me that I could be a parent liaison, but also that I now can pass that on and recognize talents within our parents.
That's great. Thank you, Maria. And Nasha, I know that you are an active parent volunteer. I wonder if you'd describe a little bit about some of the experiences that you've had.
Well, I have to say, for me, finding ways to be, to get plugged into the school community has, all three of these ladies, I have to give kudos to them, have really been integral in helping to groom leadership qualities, you know, within myself and other parents, and finding ways to help place parents in different roles that they could be successful. I started out with Maria being our parent liaison and school community coordinator. And from getting to know Maria, and Maria's very, very good at delegating. So if somebody needs parents for something, Maria, because she is a parent liaison and she takes that very seriously, would call on parents that she knew would were reliable and could, you know, meet different obligations. And from there, the, you know, things have grown. I've gotten to meet more people within the district. I'm an IPS parent as well, and also figure out how it is to, I mean, how to build those relationships successfully between the administration and families, and also if for some reason you need to contact somebody outside of your building and go to the district, you know, to learn the chain of command and learn the things that you do to solve problems. And all of this is a result of getting to know first Maria in our school, and then also Liz, who was who manages our school, because we are a Bridges to Success school, and then also getting to know Jackie, who works with parents all over the state. And so those, these relationships have really been integral in helping me to find my way to volunteer and become, you know, somewhat successful at it.
Thank you for that. I said in our introductory comments that it matters that a parent or a grandparent, a mom, a dad, an aunt, that somebody is involved in the school on behalf of the child. I wonder if any of you can describe some of that research or tell us some of the lessons learned about that.
I can start if you want.
I think all of you can do that from your own point of view.
Well, what we've seen in the research over the last 20 years is that it's real conclusive. There's been really great studies all over the United States and internationally as well that show us that when families are engaged, that their children just do better across all the ways that we want kids to be successful. So both academically, socially, emotionally, that's the bottom line that we know. And I think it's intuitive, you know. As parents, you know that the more you're involved, that the better your kids do. But I think that oftentimes parents don't really realize the power that they have. And so part of our work has really been to encourage and to build confidence for families to know that what they do at home to connect school is so vitally important. We see that children whose parents are actively involved with the learning, with their children's learning, they graduate at higher rates, they take higher level courses, and are just, as I said, are more successful on the whole range of what we want for our children.
And others of you.
And when you think about it and take a look at a successful student or just a successful adult, no one who's been successful would you be able to say did not have an adult, a parent, whether it be a grandmother, a grandfather, aunt, uncle, they've always had an adult to be supportive of them. And that's the key factor. When kids come into school, of course, we have adults, the parents who are guiding them and making sure that they get the right kinds of things that's necessary for school. And as they go through school, then we start just learning how to support not just the child, but how to support the teacher as the teacher is doing what they do, teachers are doing what they do to help. So the whole bottom line is anyone who is successful can always probably point back and say, you know, that person made a difference in my life. My parent made a difference. My grandma, they'll tell you somebody, some adult made a difference. And I always used to, as a principal, remind the kids that I was their parent when they were in school. And so, you know, that parent is just someone who's guiding you, who's keeping you, keeping your interests best at their heart. And I say that that's what is so important for every child, for everyone to know that they have someone who really is supporting, guiding, and looking out for their best interests.
Well, and I think parents have, I don't want to say a greater responsibility now that there are so many options and so many choices in schools and magnet schools and charter schools and private school vouchers. You really have to be on top of it. You know, what is best for your child? Know the ins and outs of applying to a charter or looking at a magnet school. I noticed with Jalen and Riley, both are at school 56, they're my grandchildren, and I love it because they know Nana has her eye on them. But I made a very deliberate choice that they be at school 56, which happens to be a Montessori school. And as I've worked with other parents, and we've shared stories and some, you know, some real trials in communicating with the school or communicating with the teacher, that I've seen parents grow. I've seen myself grow. So not only is it good for the children, which is our first initiative, children first, but it's good for the parents to grow and step outside of their comfort zone, and they don't have to do that alone.
Can I just add that the other piece from the research is that that's really emerging is how, especially the University of Chicago, their longitudinal study over 9 years with turnaround schools and schools that were really struggling in Chicago, the only schools that turned around and where children were learning the way that we want our kids to be learning were those schools who did a great job with parent engagement. And there were other factors too, but it was one of five mm-hmm. factors. So I think that's really important for us to know that schools get better. Schools are better when they're highly engaged and where there are great partnerships between families and schools.
And that was one of the reasons with Bridges to Success that we talked about the partnerships of trying to remove barriers for kids to be successful in school. We realized that educating a child in the classroom is not the only place for that child to be successful. But we realized that we have to bring about community support to our schools as a key factor, but the other main and key factor is the parent. And so parent engagement is real key. And so with our school community coordinators, they are a combination. They have a combination of jobs that they say, oh, it may be overwhelming, but they're parent coordinators as well as community coordinators. And that is so important in being able to make sure that services for our kids are not just from the community, but they're from the home as well. And like Maria was saying, helping parents to understand that they have a voice in school is so important. Nasha, I know, probably in her own special way, came very quietly to the school and says, I'll just do whatever you want me to do. But now she wasn't quiet then.
No.
But I think she now knows how to navigate the system that she was saying. So when she has issues of concern, she knows how to do what is necessary. And that's the part that so many times our parents lacked, the knowledge of how to navigate and advocate for mm-hmm. their children. So it is real key for our parents to be made aware of how to advocate for their students, for their children, and make sure that their needs are being addressed within the schools.
You know, part of what you're all taking me back to the early days when my own children were quite young and beginning kindergarten, and I remember going to their kindergarten teacher and saying, I have a workplace that's flexible. I want to help you. You tell me what I can do to help you, and I'm glad to do it. And I do remember spending the night on the school gym floor for a sleepover, but I was okay with that. How do parents approach a teacher? How do parents approach a school in a way that says, really, I want the best interest of all kids at heart. You know, what should my words sound like? What should my demeanor be? How do I build that relationship in a positive way? Because I know not all parents have had great relationships in schools, you know. So, and even if they did have good relationships in schools, that's not where they work every day. You know, they work in a million and one other places with different workplace rules, and schools have very unique workplace rules. You referred to that, Nasha. There's a way, right? Mm-hmm. So help us decode some of that. You know, how do we make that approach?
I think schools have to take a responsibility for cultural competency. And I think sometimes when we think about that, we don't think about the cultures in our school. But sometimes when a parent comes to our building and they have on their pajama bottoms and, you know, their flip-flops, and they don't quite know how to articulate, that doesn't mean they don't care for their children.
Exactly. They care deeply, and that's why they're there.
They care deeply. And they have brought us the best that they have to offer, which is their children. And so I think it has to start with the school, and that you just don't write someone off because they're not in a three-piece suit or because their vernacular is not what ours might be. Or, oh my goodness, have you ever just thrown those little old acronyms at everybody and just been so smug? And when they say, and what are you talking about? Because my greatest lesson was at a school in IPS. And excuse me if I cry a little bit, but we were going over the Title I Parent-Student Compact. Now, oh my goodness, have you ever read that, any of you? Oh my gosh. Well, you know, I thought, oh, everybody would understand this. This very brave parent raised his hand and said to me, I can't read.
Mm-hmm.
Please read this to me, because I really want to know what you're talking about. It took 4 hours to go through the parent-student compact, but I was so humbled by that lesson. I do think the schools have to take a responsibility in how we approach parents and how we look at them. Absolutely. And there are many hidden rules in a school on how to get along and, you know, and how to look and how to approach. And that's our responsibilities as parents and educators to help them. And that's what I was talking about, seeing parents grow. But I do think we have to kind of be, I don't want to say lax, our expectations need to be high, but we have to understand where people are coming from and meet them where they are.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that drives the passion that I have for this work is my own experience when my children were in elementary school. And a school that I attended, had a wonderful culture between home and school. And from the very beginning, when my kids first went there, I felt like I was a resource because there was a culture there that said, you know, you are your parents' first teacher and you have something to offer us. What is it that you want to add? And there were so many opportunities for me to do that. And, you know, yes, I am an outgoing person, but I also knew that there were a diverse group of families and there were roles for all of us. And so that really drives my passion, because I do think that, as Maria said, you have to develop that culture And that's hard, hard work, and it doesn't just happen. And you have to have great leaders. Liz was a wonderful principal mm-hmm. that modeled that over and over again every day in her school. I think most of us probably can tell, you can walk into a school and within just a few minutes, you know what kind of a culture it is in terms of if it feels friendly or not, if you feel comfortable there, if you see pictures of kids from all different diversity, if you see lots of examples of student learning. You know, there's just keys that schools can pay attention to, so that when you walk in that building, you feel like, oh, this is my school, and I belong here.
So if I'm a mom, and it's the first day of school or the first couple weeks of school, what do I do, right? How do I start this conversation with this brand new teacher that I don't know, right?
Many families will, people who are very, I don't want to say aggressive, assertive parents and who are really engaged in what's going on, will a lot of times search the school websites and find their students' teachers and email all of them, especially if your child has a particular need that may be different from other students or just to kind of introduce your child. My youngest child just left school 56 and went on to Attic, so she's in a whole new world and this is a new environment for her. So she's gone from having one teacher and moving around the building a lot to having eight. So, but even at school 56, my oldest child went through the same classrooms for fourth and fifth grade and also sixth grade. And so I had to go to the sixth grade teacher and explain to him, this child is not the same as this child. And I started telling him that probably a year in advance because I knew that he was going to have culture shock when he got my second child because they're very independent of one another. And so I had to start working on him a year in advance so that he wouldn't have to call me every week or come down to the parent center and find me once a week and say, you know, this and this is going on, what can we do? And it really helped us to open the lines of communication. So when she did get to his classroom, you know, I had emailed him and said, you know, if you need me, call me. This is my number. This is my husband's number. This is our email. And so if something did arise, he had no problem calling me and saying, you know, this needs to be addressed, or coming to find me in the parent center, or running into me in the hallway. And so it made it easy for us to deal with anything that came up instead of waiting until there was an issue to address it.
One of the things that, as a former principal, I used to always make sure that I shared with my teachers that they would do a good job of teaching the students, but they had to make sure that they looked at each child, not just from, like Maria said, how they come into your classroom, what they're wearing. They had to look into the children's heart. And it has to go beyond the children's heart, but also looking into the hearts of the families, the parents. They have to get to know the parents as well. And so when parents like Nasha would come and want to share information, that's real key. And I would remind teachers that they have to treat the child that's in front of them as if it was their very own child. What would you as a teacher want another teacher to do for your child? And whatever that wish is for your personal child, do the very same thing for the children who are in front of you. And I would always encourage teachers and parents to have as much of a conversation at the beginning of school as possible. Have those conversations about the interests of the children. Have those conversations about the things that are good for them, things that they don't like. You need to know that just as well. But really get to know the children, and then in addition, get to know the parents. Because when that happens, there's a good open door chemistry as far as keeping that communication going And so I think that's one of the things that we have to remember, is just look beyond the child that's sitting in front of you and look into that child's heart as well as that parent's heart.
I saw something in the paper on Sunday that it would be good to have those kind of conversations within the first 3 weeks of school.
Right.
You know, there was literally sort of a checklist in Sunday's paper that was, you know, said within the first 3 weeks have this conversation, and twice a year do this, and three times a year do that. But they sort of gave this prescription. I mean, is that what you would recommend, that there are some sort of regular check-in points apart from maybe some of the things you do to benefit the classroom? Do you know?
I think definitely from both sides that teachers really reach out to as many of their families as soon as possible, as Nasha said, so that you're getting to establish that relationship before, in the beginning. And the same for parents. To the extent that you can share contact information, because I think that's a huge issue between classroom teachers and parents, that oftentimes they really don't know what is the best way to contact each other. And that can be a huge, huge barrier. You know, do you want to be called at night? If you're working during the day and you only receive calls during the day, that's just not going to be helpful as a parent. Teachers can't get out of classrooms during the day. So there's a lot of barriers, I think. Do families have email? I mean, right now we're in an environment where many of our teachers are being required to communicate online, which is wonderful, and we want that to happen. But we also have to recognize that not all of our families are connected. And so how are you reaching out in those other ways? But bottom line, I think, yeah, as soon as you can establish that relationship and recognize that, I think, I hope we get a chance to talk a little bit about when there are some mismatches.
No, I think you can go right down that path now.
Because you're not, you know, you're, at least in my experience with my two children, you know, there were some rough years that there was just a personality disconnect or a learning disconnect, that how my child learned best, you know, his needs, because I have two boys, were just not being met in the best way. And that just happens sometimes. And maybe it was a bad match for me. Maybe I was, you know, not in sync with that teacher. So I think that there's, if you're starting, you know, at the beginning where you're in earnest, hey, you know, I know you have the best interest for my child. I have the best interest for my child. How can we work together? How can we reach each other when problems arise? You know, how can we kind of set the tone now?
Mm-hmm. Any other tips, sort of following on Jackie's thread? I mean, there's a lot of overtures that can be made, right?
Well, not necessarily about the mismatches, but as early as possible, getting to know the expectations and then how to keep the communication going. So we talked earlier about the first few weeks of school is so key with making sure that you get information about how things are going to go on throughout the course of the year, whether newsletters are going to be sent home weekly, what parents should be looking for as far as how the teacher is going to communicate with the home, and what kinds of things are going to be expected of the student as far as homework or reports that has to be turned in, all of that kind of stuff, as well as making appointments for conferences. So if there is a misunderstanding, how do you make that appointment? Do you as a parent just show up at the door, and then because you show up at the door, if the teacher is not available at that time to talk to you, that also can lead into a really mismatch of signals, thinking that, well, she doesn't care about me, she's not available, she or he is not available. So understanding the dynamics of the school, understanding the dynamics of even that classroom, how things are going to operate, is real key. And just keeping that going on is a major factor. But involving parents in the school and involving parents in the classroom as much as possible is also another key factor. As a former principal, I used to try to make sure that parents, even if they didn't want to come and be involved in the classroom, we tried to involve them in the school. And we would do that by finding out what little bit of time the parent might have to offer, what things a parent might be able to do, and say, what little bit you can do is so important here because we have so many jobs, so many opportunities. Do whatever you can to support us, and then show the teacher that you're interested. So trying to involve parents is really key. And then for those reluctant parents who feel like, I don't have any skills, I don't have any talents, I don't have any gifts, I used to also maybe partner them with a teacher who was willing to say, if you would help me with this, I'll be most grateful. And having parents to partner in leadership responsibilities with teachers, with staff members, was a major factor for me as far as getting parents to feel valued, number one, as well as getting parents to feel that they had some skills to bring to the classroom. I know Maria, we tease her because Nasha used to be what she called her assistant. And Nasha would come to school as a volunteer, but with her having many opportunities to help Maria in her role, I think gave a lot of value to her. And that's one of the things that I found as a principal that really helped for those reluctant parents. Give them opportunities to help. Show them that there are a multitude of ways to be of service in the school. They don't want some time to be in the classroom because many parents feel like, I'm not really good about the classroom. But they can help sort out papers. They can help organize some things in the school. They can help in all kinds of ways. And so make sure that parents know that they can be of service within the school.
Well, it does take many parents at School 56 to keep me in order. And I have many assistants, and I love it. But, I think the thing is, that is really when you do rely on your other parents that first week. Because now I have that dual role as a grandmother and having children at School 56, or knowing Nasha, or my other parents who are strong, and some that aren't. What are not strong personalities, but what other parents say to new parents goes much further sometimes than what a principal can say, what a parent liaison can say, or even the teacher. If you have a parent that says, my child was in this classroom last year, it was a little rocky in the beginning, but I want you to know this is the best experience they've ever had, or this is how I approached this teacher. I was always able. I brought snacks. I brought Kleenex. Kleenex is huge, And that's when you really do rely on your parents. And that's when they have voice, because sometimes it's much easier. They laugh and say in our parent center, it's Aunt B's table. We just sit and we just solve the problems of the world or the school. But a lot of times that's where the most wisdom and maturity. And I've seen parents leave then with a whole different, look at a classroom. So really rely on your other parents. And I think if you can help a parent say to that teacher, what we have in common is my child. And I know you want what's best, and I want what's best. So let's work this out together.
Mm-hmm. I want to wonder if there's anyone in the audience that has a question or a comment. You've been listening a lot, and if you have questions, we'd like to honor that and allow you to ask them. And Allie will bring you the microphone. Thank you for being patient for that. That'll make a good recording for us.
No problem. My name is Jermaine McFarland. I'm a grandparent. I'm curious. You were making a comment about we're in an age where everything is electronic and teachers are required to use emails. Personally speaking, I think teachers can be overwhelmed. They have their schoolwork that they're doing, and they have multiple classes that they're conducting, and so many children per class. And if you have so many parents who are engaged in interaction with the teacher, when they come home, the teacher has to deal with schoolwork, try to deal with their home and activities and everything. And if they have parents there who are sending them emails wanting to stay up to date and active in what's going on and everything because they can't actually come in, you know, on a regular basis. That teacher's inbox is going to be overflowing. And there's almost no way that that teacher can address all of these matters. How do you approach that?
Well, I think I'd love to hear from everybody because I know we've all had our different experiences with that. But I think that we have to have some forgiveness and compassion for each other. That you're, you know, you're seeing the teacher's side of that. That okay, I come home and I've got all these, you know, this huge, all these emails. And then if you don't have that perspective as a parent and really believe that that teacher is ignoring you, then that can just create some real bad feelings. And so I think that, but checking it out and then having some, for the teacher, I think, to be able to say to parents, this is a reasonable amount of time that I should be answering you. And if you don't hear from me in this X amount of time, you know, please call me or send me another email so that there again, it's that conversation and that give and take so that, you know, you are thoughtful about the fact that there might be 25 requests, you know, each night, but that you have that ability to have those set up the expectations that you talked about earlier.
I think there needs to be a willingness on both sides to embrace all forms of communication and also some social media and things. And I'm not the most social media savvy person, I will admit that. But I think that what my experience has been, the teachers that I've contacted have always seemed to be really pleased to get the communication, especially if the communication doesn't start off as negative. Because a lot of times parents will kind of hang back, especially as children get older and like to sit back and sort of let their children start to find their own way. And so you don't necessarily call every, you know, you're not calling the teacher all the time. And, you know, maybe you'll get a flyer in the backpack every now and then and maybe not. But with, you know, budgetary constraints, everybody's looking for the most cost-effective way to contact parents and also for parents to contact teachers and faculty. And for some people, that might mean texting. And IPS, the parent portal, is IPS online. And there's a mechanism in there where you can send messages directly to the teachers. I've had teachers who have been really receptive to text messages. And then even some schools are starting to use Facebook and Twitter and even Instagram and all that stuff that, you know, as again, I'm not very savvy, but my children are, to contact parents. And so if it's hard for a teacher to make a direct contact with every single family, but if they need to say, I'm going to be out of the building for 3 days and my substitute, you know, this will be the substitute, or, you know, contact this person in my absence, then it's easy for them to reach out to everyone. Because sometimes, especially as your children, the older your children get, the less communication you get from school. And it's very important to have that. But it's if we go kind of sometimes have to sidestep the children, and if the school can reach directly to the parent and the parent directly to the teacher, then it's the communication sometimes flows a lot easier because you don't have the middleman who's going to lose a piece of paper. But if I give the teacher my cell phone number and they text me or they request to be texted, you know, if there's an emergency or a situation that arises, you can send them a short text, they send you one back, and, you know, something can be handled that quickly versus waiting on paper or waiting on a phone call. And sometimes, you know, there's some mixed signals, or, you know, you may misinterpret something because, you know, the lack of communication coming back rapidly, or if you can't respond to the teacher, you know, you don't have to worry about waiting for the phone call if you can do something instant and have it taken care of immediately.
It's a great question, because it is with the ability for any of us to communicate electronically, sometimes it makes our expectations be quite instant. Just because we can hit send quite instantly doesn't mean the answer is going to come. So I appreciate that. Allie, I think you have another question.
Good evening. I just had a comment. Liz Odle is very mild and doesn't say, oh, yes. But just the experience of being in her building, and then in 55 as a grandparent, we don't say child-centered as much as we used to, but I think even the communication is improved if there's a creative way to bring parents into your building. It's unbelievable the kind of reception parents had when they came in for night at bingo, when they came in for just a lot of programs that just brought parents into the building, and there was a lot more, by the way, kind of comments going on, and it avoided a lot of difficulty in communication before they started.
So what Shirley is talking about is that we tried to plan a lot of programs that was of interest to parents. And then, like she said, so then we would get them there and use the, by the way, while we have you here, we want to talk about some other things. Even if there were basketball games in between the break time, we would spend time talking to the parents about other things that were happening in the school. Bingo for books, we would teach during the little sessions. But it's all about getting to know the parent as an individual, and then making sure once you do that, that you meet the needs of the parents that you're working with. Expectations, guidelines, routines, procedures, all of those are so key in making sure that those are clear in the beginning. And so for those parents that are trying to communicate or address emails or Twitter and all of that, I think it would be from one teacher to the other teacher to explain, this is how I'm going to do it. It may not be the same way that Maria would do the response to parents, but that's one of the things that every teacher would have to make sure that communication of how they're going to function while the child is in their classroom is going to be real key and being very inviting to the parents' needs.
Allie has another question, but I just want to reflect for a second on what you said, Liz, because it seems to me that at the same time that you know, a parent or a teacher might say, well, I really will do best by cell phone, or I'll really do best via email or whatever, that as a parent, whether I'm a mom, a dad, a grandparent, whatever, I ought to be able to say, I cannot take a call at work unless it is an absolute emergency, or I can't access personal email at work, so you won't hear. You know, I think that that has to go both ways, too, right? I mean, I have that obligation as a parent to seem approachable as well.
And that was one of the key factors that we used to try to make sure that we were aware of, because oftentimes if there was a child who might be having difficulties in the classroom, some teachers would think, call the parent. And then they would think that the parent's going to come right now.
You can't
and
always
just
do
because that.
That
parent couldn't come right now, the thought was, this parent doesn't care. And so we had to make sure that we were consider enough to understand that parents have lives too. Parents have jobs. Parents have additional obligations. And so just because a phone call comes in the middle of the day and they don't show up before the day ends, that you don't need to put a tag on that parent. You need to understand why that parent can't respond when you immediately call. So it's, again, it goes back to relationships.
Right.
It goes back
exactly.
to understanding what's happening with each other,
exactly.
teachers as well as the parents.
Yeah. Allison, do you have another question up there? Oh, yes, sir, please.
I think one of the great things about the school or the communities and schools or the bridges to success is those evening activities and the parent activities don't always have to be run by the school administrators and by teachers who are spending a lot of time there. Allows community organizations to come in and do some of those things too. So churches, businesses in the area could actually run those evening things, inviting parents to come in to open the doors for those other times together, that the teachers aren't the ones that are always cooking the hot dogs and making the popcorn or whatever else. One of the things that I've seen from Maria that has been outstanding is it's not just in the school that I've seen her. In fact, I've not been to your school to see you. I see you everywhere else. When I go to Rebuilding the Wall, when I go out to the Legacy Center, you're there, you're in the community, you're not waiting for parents to come to you. Mm-hmm. The school is going out and getting to the parents prior to that. Can you speak to how you've done that and how you're doing that intentionally and unintentionally?
I was going to say, it is strategic. I'm at a magnet school, so it's not like I have just one community, not just Martindale, Brightwood, or Nesco. I really try to talk to my parents to see where they're going to be. Because if they're going to be there, I'm nosy. I want to know what they know. So I try to be there as often as I can. If I can't be there, I'll ask another parent or my daughter, Abby, Nasha, to please represent our school at that function. But I, again, and I thank you, Neil, about that, but it has to be very strategic because we're all on time constraints right now as far as how far we can stretch ourselves. But finding out, it goes back to relationships, where our parents are going to be and what they're interested in. And that's how I make the decisions on where to go.
Please, there's another question.
I had a question for you all. I didn't know if anyone's in the high school level or if this conversation was supposed to go that direction.
Conversation, I think, well, actually, that's sort of where I want to go next, okay, to say what difference does it make? So please, take us to high school.
I'm just so interested. In the last few years, I've worked as a tutor or volunteered at the high school level, and I'm such a crier, and I've met you before, and I've met you before. Is it too late? When you're talking about the University of Chicago study and the turnaround schools, when you have such breakdown in respect, students for teachers and students for one another, and you just don't see anything really happening academically because there's so many other issues. You know, is it so beyond help now, getting parents involved? I think we all know the I-STEP scores aren't the problem. They're the result of the problem. And the problem is something's so wrong in the home that these wonderful young people are coming from. They come so disadvantaged, so angry, so neglected, some abused. I worked with a wonderful principal at Shortridge who was let go because his theory didn't get to have time enough to work. Kids had tears streaming down their faces when he was let go. He was building a sense of love and respect, thinking then academic success will follow. And it just breaks my heart seeing all of you so dedicated to these children and building this communication with parents. But what went so wrong? I mean, these kids in high school came from IPS grade schools. I know, Mrs. Odell, you have this, you were 14, and I know how much you did. What happens to those kids when they leave your school?
Well, that's why I think that we have to really remember that educating a child is not just in the classroom. It is in the community as well. And teachers can't do it alone, as well as parents can't do it alone. It is a joint effort. And the organization that I'm with, Bridges to Success, functions on what we call six principles or conditions for learning, where you have to make sure certain things are taken care of or addressed in order for a child to be successful in school. But one of the things we have to think about is that the most important factor for a child is that child's family. And we take another step back and say, but the most important factor that helps that family is the community. So it takes all of us working together to really make it work. And I know you may have experienced some what you call very negative experiences in the high school level, but there are lots of good and positive mm-hmm. things happening as well. I'm elated and just so excited when I go to organizations or celebrations or graduations where I see kids who've been through homeless situations, kids who've said that the family may not have supported them, but then the community as a family supported them. So I just say we have to still look for those sparks. They are there in multitude of ways. You just have to know that it's going to take all of us to help make our children successful.
Do you know, I'd like to answer that question in part too. Part of my personal work history has to do with youth organizations. And there is a network of youth organizations in this community that cares very deeply for these children, and they are prepared to intervene from the earliest years clear on through college. There are some youth organizations now that literally are seeking additional funding to keep those young people with them through college. Mm-hmm. And they've hired graduation coaches, they get mentors for those students, they provide meals for those kids, they get uniforms for those kids, they do tutoring, they're connecting with teachers on behalf of those children. So for me, I mean, I would just so support what Liz said, and I just really need to honor the work of the youth organizations in this community. They, you know, in addition to the out-of-school experiences during the school year, it is also the tremendous responsibilities that they take on during the summer to keep academics up for those kids, to literally talk to teachers and say, what is little Jason need? You know, where are his academic deficiencies? We're hiring teachers in our summer camps to try to make sure Jason's okay. You know, so I think that that there aren't easy answers, but there certainly are tools and there are resources. I also think back to a young woman that I met at one of the township high schools this past year when we were doing some work there. And we asked the kids what made a difference to them and whether or not a kid graduated from high school. And they said, parents. And as we queried them a bit more about that, you know, one of the young women there said, well, I've just made my mom all my friends' moms. My mom makes sure that they take their tests on time, that they get to the ACT test. My mom has made sure that my friends have gotten on their college visits. My mom has made sure that, you know, that my friends have a place to do homework. So I mean, it is a village, and I think that that's a really powerful, I learned a lot from those kids that day, you know, about what that takes. But I would encourage you also, the conversation that we did in Good Ideas That Work, and I think it was early July, we had many youth organizations here that night who talked about the interventions for kids who are homeless, kids in the foster care system, kids who need mentors. You know, so you can look at that online, and we would always recommend that you call 211 for information and referral through the United Way system as well. So it's kind of a long answer. Usually I don't talk very much, but I really felt the need to say that about our nonprofit friends that are out there. Was there another question, Allie? Please.
I wanted to just...
Yeah, while we're getting to that question.
You were talking about, you know, is it hopeless? And I wanted to just kind of give you a personal example that, no, it's not hopeless. Because you never know when seeds have been planted. And many years ago, we had foster children in our home. And one night after this child had been gone for several years, I got a call, and it was from jail. And Terry was in jail, but he, you know, and I thought, well, how can this be uplifting to me? But what he said was, because I had been in your home, and because I knew this teacher and this teacher, I realized that I can be a better man now, and you planted those seeds for me. So it's not hopeless.
I do want to honor the fact that there is a lot of hurt out there, and that there are, you know, we're fortunate enough, I think, in the work that we do, that we get to see both. You know, we see when people are so frustrated because communications have broken down, and it is so frustrating. But then we also get to see those sparks, as I can't remember who said that, maybe Liz, where because of conversations, I think connecting families and is a really powerful strategy, whether it's at elementary, preschool, elementary, middle, or high, that in any school community, having them create their own kind of social network, I think is really powerful, because then it can be a smaller group, but you have somebody to, you know, share ideas with and support each other, because there are lots of bumps. The other thing I just wanted to share in terms of the high school that we've really been excited about this last few years, middle and high school, is taking parents on college trips. And that has been a wonderful experience for the families and for us, because oftentimes you see schools that they'll offer college trips, but not for parents. And so we started creating opportunities for parents to go along with their students. And that has been so exciting, because most of the parents that have and Jermaine is shaking her head because I think she's been on every single one with her grandsons. Some of our parents have never been on a college campus before, and so it was really exciting for them to be there for the first time, and whether it was IUPUI or Butler or Marion or Terre Haute, we even went to Notre Dame last year. I mean, it was really exciting for those parents to get a feel for a campus so that they could really support where their child was going to go and just have that dream. So that's just one practice that I wanted to share with you that I think is a really, we've been very encouraged by that.
And another practice that is really good in reference to the job of the school coordinator and parent liaison is that it is expected that they would do parent workshops at the school to help make sure that parents are aware of how to assist their child in school. And those workshops can be done right there at the school, but they can be done in celebratory fashions where parents come in and the parents are taught side by side with their child on how to even read, how to ask the probing questions, how to have celebrations about what they're doing in school and out of school. And some of our parent liaisons, if they can't get the parents to come to school and they are in a community where there is an apartment and they have a clubhouse, they've even taken those workshops to the clubhouses because they go where the parents are and involve the parents at that level. So teaching the parents, as well as informing the parents about opportunities, not only just for the kids, but just for themselves, too. It's good.
We have another question up there. Gentlemen, please.
Yes, my name is Lamar Davis. I'm with the Lillian Davis Foundation. And you already spoke on some of the things I just want to kind of raise our conscience to. And that is just that we have to be creative in many of the things that we do. And sometimes we see the problems, and the problems are always easy to identify. The solutions also are not always as clear. And so it takes everyone kind of working together to try to get to the solution. And what one parent may bring to the table, another parent may have another talent or another skill. And then a community partner may have resources. And it really does take, as you allude to, a whole village to raise a child. One of the things they're doing at Riverside School 44 is they actually put a parent, actually a volunteer center through the foundation in the school. And it gives some clarity to the parent as well as to the community that, first of all, they're welcome, that when they come, they're going to be greeted by someone. I think the young lady mentioned about just how busy the teachers are. But it's not just the teachers. The staff is busy. The principals are busy. And sometimes to really get to the goals or to really establish the goals and then achieve the goals, you have to be able to see it all the way through with other people's arms and other people's hands and their feet and their mind. And I think that when the schools begin to, I'm really very happy that BTS, Bridges to Success, is a strong organization in the schools, because it allowed the schools then to be able to open up their doors. At one point, I mean, many of the schools, it was hard to get into them. And parents felt the barrier to, you know, in terms of coming to the school and not feeling welcome. So I guess my question to this panel is, what are some of the creative ideals that others may be doing that you're aware of to be able to reach the parents and the community to bring those resources to the school? Because it's not just in academics. Even as we hear about behaviors and we hear about other needs, the school has so many things that they have to address. And I know in many of the schools they are addressing them. But sometimes we don't know what they're doing at 56, or we don't know what they're doing over at 61. We don't know what they're doing at some of the charter schools, because even the information there is so kept in that school, or to the parents or to the teachers that are in that school. So, again, I want to thank you for this discussion.
Yeah, well, I would love to hear creative ideas. That's a great question, because good ideas are worth sharing. So, and it does change, right? Every environment, every school, every neighborhood, every level is different. So what might you, any of you, bubble up?
Well, one thing that I see as being very effective in the three Martindale Brightwood schools, and I know I've heard some mention of communities in schools, there's a full-service community schools grant that is supporting schools 51, 56, and 69. And some of the really good things that have come about as a result of that are, each of the schools has an adult learning center, and there are classes offered through the partnership with IUPUI, so that as the students are being educated, parents can come in as well, and they're anything from writing classes to unlocking the genius in your child to you know, there's some talk of having Spanish classes because some of the schools have high bilingual families and things, so that other parents who maybe are native English speakers can learn Spanish to communicate with the others. There's transportation, because that's a barrier in that community for some of the students. If you are a child who is fortunate enough where your family has a car, and your parents can come pick you up, and you can participate in sports and some of the after-school clubs and things. But through the grant, you know, there's transportation funds available so that every child could maybe participate in scouts or, you know, different clubs and things, and be able to get home and not worry that if they don't have a ride, they can't. There's all of the schools have nurses, and, I mean, there's a real feeling of community, you know, in those buildings. And I mean, anything as small as having, you know, I'm a PTA mom too. So, you know, one thing we try to do at 56 is to combine the Title I workshops with PTA meetings. And so that way you're not asking parents to come out twice in one week to, you know, hear me talk for 20 minutes and then come back another day and hear Maria talk for 20 minutes. You come, we serve dinner, the workshop is presented, and sometimes the classroom will present information. And that way you get parents that you don't necessarily see. If your child is getting up there to show how they're learning about the breakdown of an atom, well, then you're going to come and see that, and you're going to stay with your child. And you maybe aren't somebody who comes to a PTA meeting every month, but you know those families always come and support their children. So it's you know, trying to use what you have and make it work for you. I mean, you know, however that looks in your building.
So really maximizing opportunities, it sounds like. Other ideas, thoughts?
One of the things within Indianapolis Public Schools, we've been blessed that our superintendent values
having parents, and so in every IPS school, we have a parent center. And the parent center is not necessarily designed just to be the office of the parent liaison. It is supposed to be an invitational place for parents to come, and it is supposed to be a place that parents can call their own. So you'll find in some of the schools where they may have computers in the parent center, and I think Title I has even provided a computer just for the parent to know that they can come to school, they can use that computer, they can come to school maybe even to have a cup of coffee in that parent center to talk to other parents. But every IPS school has a parent center that should be, if it is not, it should be made to be invitational for the parents to be used. And because when you think about getting on resumes done or looking for jobs, most everything is done now on the computer. And so many times parents are going to the library to do that, but they can also come to the schools if that school advertises and lets them know that you have a center at our school as well. So making sure that the school has opportunities for parent learning as well as student learning.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I just wanted to give one more example from your school. I was thinking when you were talking, because Riverside is a great place, and I've been there, been fortunate to be there many times and see the volunteer center. It's wonderful. But that, you know, in addition to the parent centers, all the IPS schools have parent liaisons. And your parent liaison started implementing home visits several years ago before it was required. And she just did a remarkable job. So I thought it was brilliant. In fact, we videotaped her one time because the family said it was okay. And she started going into the homes of the students who were struggling the most. So the teachers would identify the families that they would like her to visit. And she would bring packets and really talk to the families about what they could do to support their children. So it was a beautiful example, you know, right in your school that's been replicated. Now all the parent liaisons implement home visits. So it's a great strategy.
I don't think it's really creative, except that at my school, at School 56, if I think it's fun, then it's a go. Because if it's not fun, why would you go out? You know, and why would I expect another parent to come? So we do some kind of quirky things like makeup madness, muffins for moms and makeup madness.
Donuts for dads. I just want to say I have coworkers who are all about donuts for dads.
Dads and dice, bagels with Bennett. Just, you know, a luau party, which actually was our read-up family night where we gave read-up strategies. So, you know, I ask my grandchildren, do you think you would like to come and do this Boomers boot camp? Mm-hmm. And we did math, basketball math with Boomer, you know, that kind of thing. So if I don't think it's fun, and if I wouldn't leave my sofa to go out, then, you know, we don't do that. Or if my grandchildren say, oh, Nana, that's too boring, we don't do that. So, you know, I think having fun. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we forget that learning is fun. Education can be fun. So, you know, I don't know how creative that is, but, you know, just to have fun. Another thing, and I'll be calling you, Neil, is that we're going to be doing clubs. Because I found out on a trip, probably with Jackie, that a lot of problems happened at lunchtime on the playground. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking we need to have more community partners in at lunchtime to have clubs. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be, it's not creative. I wish I would have thought of it, but I didn't, but somebody else did, and I certainly don't mind copying.
Do you know, I would point out, Maria, part of what's sort of magical about what you said, actually what all of you have said, is that one strategy doesn't fit all.
Right.
That just because I think muffins with moms is fun doesn't mean that, you know, I wouldn't necessarily think donuts with dads is fun, but the dad might, right? Mm-hmm. And similarly, a luau might be fun for others. Boomer might be fun for somebody else. So seems to me that when I've seen this work and work well, It's because there have been multiple strategies. You know, how do we reach the parents who can be at home during the day? How do we interact with parents who can be available in the evening? How do we offer jobs? You know, maybe a parent wants to help in the classroom, but really the only time they have is at home on the weekend. Well, is there something that dads can assemble or to build at home? You know, really trying to be flexible and meet as many possibilities as possible, really, is part of what I hear you saying. Did you have another question, Ellie? Oh, please.
First off, I want to say School 56 is wonderful. My son went there from kindergarten all the way through sixth grade, and we had special needs because of our religious background. And they accommodated that in such a way that no other school did, and I really like that. But I also have a question. You said the parent liaison centers, are they supposed to be open every day for parents, a certain time of day, or how does that work?
They're supposed to be open every time the school is open. Every school has a parent center. The parent liaison can have their office in the center, but it does not have to be. But the parent center really, in some cases, was there at a school before parent liaisons were. And one of the things about having a parent center is that it is a room that's dedicated just for parents. You know, sometimes parents want to come to school and just chill, just want to be in the school, or maybe even say, I'm here. Because sometimes a child knowing that a parent can be accessible makes a difference in how that child performs or in that classroom. And so some parents would even come and just say, hey, I'm going to hang out here for a while. I'll be here. And if the principal has anything or your teacher has any papers to be sorted out, I'm going to do it right here. So, yes, they are there. And it's the intent of the school district to make sure that they are invitational, that they are open for parents to be there.
And, you know, it's just ironic, I think, in some ways tonight that all of us on this stage tonight are women, because there certainly are dads who are doing things and grandpas and uncles. It's also ironic that most of you have, I mean, Jackie, although you work statewide, the other three of you have clear IPS connections. But this goes on in every school, that it's not just IPS schools that have parent liaisons or have welcoming parent centers, that really takes place everywhere, and the opportunity to really explore that in your own school district with your own child's school is something that all of us should take advantage of.
And I'd like to add another factor, is that parent engagement does not always have to be at the school. You can engage parents outside of the school. Even activities, when Maria talked about being fun, I know we have some of our parent liaisons that have even taken parents on fishing trips. And to have a parent to take their child and to teach them or to enjoy fishing is a wonderful teaching experience. But, you know, that was one activity. And then there's been movies with moms where they've gone out to a movie and then had a chance to discuss that kind of thing. Even a book club. But it doesn't always have to be right there at school. But it takes knowing the parents, knowing the interests of the parents, to make sure that kind of connection can happen.
That's great. Are there any other remaining questions? Oh, please. Kella.
Right now we have a great deal of interest.
I'm gonna Kella, hang on.
Right now we have a great deal of problems and challenges with African American male retention and graduation. And you just referenced the fact that we don't haven't necessarily addressed issues dealing with fathers, parents who are perhaps not available, and then those who are perhaps not necessarily connected to the school. So how do you talk about black male engagement, white male fathers? How do we talk about issues of gender and equity for our children, but particularly for the males?
Well, with the United Way, we have been partnering with the 100 Black Men in bringing in that organization to help with mentoring and what we call the small groups, but big brothers, big sisters, partners with one-on-one, and we're looking for, just even though Maria talked about lunchtime clubs, a lot of the coordinators that I work with specifically look for opportunities to try to make those connections happen. It is an ongoing thing that we try to make sure that we can align males, and the first key is inviting them to come to the schools and to be involved, and finding creative ways to make sure that we can make those connections happen. But it's a constant thing of making sure that we can do those things, and that's why I mentioned about that fishing trip. That was something that was just of interest in that school, where they were able to get the fathers to come out. Another thing that was of interest was where some of the coordinators and parent liaisons have invited fathers to come in and just do some of the crafty things that they do at home. And it may not be the individual child whose father comes in that day to help out or to build something at the school, but just like when you mentioned how you learned from someone else's mother, some of the other young men are learning from someone else's father who comes in sometime and helps out with their skills and support to the school. So it is a constant thing, and it's a constant thing that we just have to be intentionally aware of, doing things not just for parents, but doing things for fathers as well.
And I'm so glad you brought it up, because we had invited a dad to be here tonight, and he wasn't able to come at the last minute. But in our work, looking at how do you engage dads, and it's a little bit repetitive what you've already said, but I think just recognizing that many of our schools there are more females in a building than there are males, and so really relying on, and many of our children don't have men at home in their families, and so really partnering with organizations to help have men present in buildings. Some of you may have heard of Tony Wallace, who for years has been committed to, he started Security Dads probably 15 years ago, and where he would just go into a building and every day have men walking the halls. And he started Arlington and then went on to work with other dads around the state and United States, really, to look at that model, because it was very, very successful. Mm-hmm. We also have had a dad's expo the last 3 years that we just had designated a day where dads could come in and talk about their issues and how, you know, what did they want to see happen differently in schools. And so it was real. I think just listening and knowing that we can't, if our PTAs are primarily women that are, you know, that's not always going to be the strategy, that we're not always going to have men that want to get organized in that way. So I think that just recognizing and having those conversations. And I know you've done, you know, your center has done great work on research and looking at some of the issues for particularly African-American males and how we can address those problems. And so just having to continue to have the conversations, I guess.
Is there another question? Ellie? Thank you.
Hi, good evening. My name is Stuart Showalter. I'm an advisor to state policymakers and legislators on issues related to child custody. And I was going to expand a bit on what she was asking about. One of the things coming up as the Indiana Parenting Time Guidelines are being reviewed, and there will be revised ones issued next year. Currently, the custodial parent is required to collect information from the school and pass that on to the non-custodial parent. One of the changes we'll be making in that is to try to encourage both parents to become more involved, is that each parent is responsible for obtaining that information on their own. Much of it is available, as we've said, through websites, emails, and through those types of methods. I'm wondering, are the schools, teachers, administrators, and so on, cognizant of not only the custodial parent and maybe a subsequent spouse, but the primary parent being the birth parent or adoptive parent, and maybe a subsequent spouse there. So we may have four adult individuals that mm-hmm. contact needs to be made with. And are there already facilities in place to make sure that any announcements get sent to, you know, both homes or both parents in that regard?
Liz, can I ask you to take that one on? Thank you for that comment.
And even though I've been away from the building as a principal for, this is my third year now, that is in existence within the school, and that's why it starts off in the very beginning with relationship building and communication as far as expectations. If there is a child who's coming to the school and they're living with one custodial parent but has another parent that wants information, they just have to fill out the paperwork to make sure that the school is aware, and then they have to establish how that communication is going to be made. In with the technology now, if it's going to be by email, if it's going to be by sending something home, that just needs to be clearly established. So it is and can happen.
I think we still have a long way to go. I mean, I'm really glad that we have the policies and that you're doing policy work. I personally, just because I get a lot of calls about that, and in our Dad's Expo that came up a lot, non-custodial dads not feeling like they, you know, that schools were very responsive. So I think we really need to continue to really help schools and have dads advocate and women advocate for non-custodial parents and getting that information, because I don't think at large it's really happening, certainly the way most of us would like to see it happen.
And it's a policy to make it happen. It's just a matter of the parent knowing that that is their right. And that's the piece that has to be communicated. Many times the parents don't know that they can request that to happen. And then, right.
Yeah. I want to, one last question, and then I think we're going to wrap it up. Thank you, Allie, for doing that.
Thank you for taking this question. Sure. It goes back to Ms. Adu's, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, you talked about navigating through the system and advocating for your child. Many parents find it hard when they have children that need special needs, children or need testing or need to have some type of help. Whether it's for learning or behavior or whatever, how do a parent who find themselves with a child who has not yet been diagnosed with a behavior problem or learning disability, but oftentimes it translates into a behavioral problem, and they don't know who to turn to or who to ask the questions to, What in the school building in that setting is there, and this may be for any of you, to help that parent with those questions? Because I have run across quite a few parents who are very frustrated, to say the least, because they have children who have special needs in that regards, and just don't feel like they're getting their questions answered.
I would, as others are formulating their thoughts, I would refer you to one of the organizations that presented a couple weeks ago called About Special Kids, mm-hmm. that they have trained parents, many, all of whom have their own children with any number of different kinds of special needs, who can provide that kind of guidance and referral. So About Special Kids, their acronym is ASK. They're located in Indianapolis. Google it, you'll find it very quickly, but that can be a great resource. And that I knew of that resource, but I loved all the hot, you know, the nodding heads that I saw as I mentioned that.
I think another great resource is another special, a parent of a child with special needs, because they've already fought the fight. And usually a parent liaison or even a principal will know who that parent is. That's a valuable resource. And I know the parent liaisons, the community coordinators, we can just be like a dog with a bone. We'll find the answers because we don't have all the answers. But I really think those parents that have already fought the fight are the best resources and ask.
And I was going to also say, too, that Jackie, even though she didn't speak up, they used to have a workshop on asking the right question.
And a lot of our, it is called Asking Questions to Get the Best Education for Your Child. So it is about advocating, and it's about creating confidence among families to be able to have the courage to ask questions. Because I think, you know, having a child with special needs, it is, you have to have so much patience to navigate the systems, and especially when they haven't been identified yet. And you know, Ms. McFarland, you've talked about that too. But in this workshop, it's just one strategy, but we found that bringing parents together and having them formulate their own questions. So sometimes we do facilitate the workshop just for parents who have children with special needs, because there is a whole, I think, huge struggle when you have that. And it's nice to have the feedback from other families and educators to move forward on it. But we've really enjoyed doing that, because sometimes it's just, you know, just having the right question, but keep asking it. Because I know for myself, I had to keep going back and saying, you know, I really feel like my child needs to be tested, and I don't feel like he's learning at the way that he should be learning. But it really took me a while, and that's been years ago. But I still hear parents with that same frustration of having to navigate the system.
I had to ask, in fact, I contacted them about a year and a half ago, but one of my children had a physical challenge to pop up that was affecting her mobility, and they gave me the procedure to follow to request testing. I was fortunate in that, you know, I have a good relationship with the school because my children have been there so long that I was able to ask directly and work with the school without having to go, you know, to an outside source and then come back. But, you know, I got the initial information by calling ASK, and it was just a post-it note stuck up in our parent center that got me the information. And from there, I was able to find out what I needed to do and then take that to the school administration, and they were able to get my issue resolved very quickly. Mm. But, you know, had I not contacted them, I wouldn't have known exactly where to start. But once I got the information, I was able to use that in the building. So those resources are invaluable.
That's perfect. Thank you. Well, I want to say thank you to all of you. This has been a really rich conversation tonight. It's been, I hope, an informative one for you. We will need to do a little cleanup on the video, but we will quickly have this posted at WFYI.org. Click on the American Graduate icon, and you'll find it there if you'd like to revisit this. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank Jackie and Liz and Maria and Nasha, not only for being here tonight, but for the extraordinary work that I know all of you have done for years on behalf of children in this community. And I know, looking around this room tonight, there are many others of you who have also done such extraordinary work on behalf of children in this community. And we are a family. These are our kids. They may not live in all of our homes, but these are our children in this community, and we're grateful for all that you've done. Our next community conversation will be in 2 weeks here in this same place. It's a really exciting one. It's called Teacher Voices. And that night, we will be hearing from the very people who have firsthand experience with those children every single day from kindergarten through high school to learn about their hopes and aspirations and dreams. They are certainly, next to parents, the most critical ingredient in a child's classroom success. And that evening, while all of you are welcome to come, we are really going to be excited to hear from teachers. So hope that you would be able to join us that night. Thank you. Once again, Melanie, thank you for your hospitality. And James, thanks for your help tonight. And we're grateful that all of you are here. Have a good evening. Thank you.